Reading from the introduction to the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna by Master Mahasya. The Lord declares, whenever true religion declines, this is a quote from the Bhagavad Gita, whenever true religion declines and irreligion prevails, I manifest myself in every age. I incarnate to establish spiritual law and destroy evil. India has produced many great spiritual leaders who are recognized and worshipped as saviors of mankind. The life and character of each of these, the life and character of each of these were as wonderful, superhuman, and divine as were those of illustrious Son of Man. Each has been like the embodiment of all divine attributes. Each has been the giver of new life to old spiritual truths and the generator of that tidal wave of spirituality which has again and again inundated the religious world, surmounting the barriers of superstition and prejudice and carrying the stream of individual souls towards the ocean of divinity. The present upheaval of the spiritual tide, the waves of which, traversing nearly half the world, have touched the shores of America, was produced by the Christ-like character and divine personality of Bhagavan Sri Ramakrishna, revered and worshipped in India today as an ideal manifestation of the divine glory. His life was so extraordinary and unparalleled that within 10 years after his departure from earth, it aroused the admiration and wonder and reverence not only of all classes of people in his own country, but of many distinguished English and German scholars of the 19th century. And reading from the Bible, the Gospel according to John, chapter 1, some of the most beautiful verses I think ever written, as begins as a poem, really. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. The same was in the beginning with God. All things were made by Him, and without Him was not anything made that was made. In Him was life, and the life was the light of men. And the light shineth in the darkness, and the darkness comprehended it not. There was a man sent from God whose name was John. The same came for a witness, to bear witness of the light, that all men through him might believe. He was not that light, but was sent to bear witness of that light. That was the true light, which lighteth every man that cometh into the world. He was in the world, and the world was made by him, and the world knew him not. He came unto his own, and his own received him not. But as many as received him, to them gave he the power to become the sons of God. And from Swami Ramdas, avatars release a world-redeeming spiritual force. A question is raised whether an avatar and a God-realized soul possess the same power and vision and carry out the same mission in this world. Surely, so far as the knowledge of God is concerned, both are on the same plane. But in the field of action, the avatar brings down the light and power of the Supreme Truth to a greater mass of humanity than a God-realized soul does. The avatar embodies not only the inner perfection of the spirit, but also exercises all the power and glory of the divine. Whereas a God-realized soul throws the light and power upon a smaller portion of humanity and works under certain limitations. It is rightly said that the God-realized soul can be compared to a well and an avatar to a river in flood. While the former can satisfy the thirst of a few who seek the well, the swollen river spreads out its waters all over the country, allaying the thirst of innumerable beings and creatures. So in the spiritual awakening of humanity, the work of an avatar is decidedly more extensive and far-reaching than that of a God-realized soul. Moreover, there is a clear assertion made by the avatar that he has descended on the earth with a special mission of liberating mankind from ignorance and bondage. A God-realized soul does not make such a declaration. We see that the great avatars like Krishna, Christ, Buddha, Muhammad, and Zoroaster are saviors of humanity and redeemers of all fallen souls. Again, if we study their teachings, we find avatars have a special message for the whole world. They preach universal love as the highest attainment, which alone can establish unity, harmony, and brotherhood in the world. Some people would have us believe that the avatars never existed and that their lives have only an allegorical meaning and relate the inner transformation of a soul from ignorance to the higher divine nature. This opinion is also not true. All the avatars after whom the principal religions of the world are founded are historical personages. Their historicity is denied because it is hard for some people to accept that God, who is infinite and impersonal, could manifest himself within the limitations which the assumption of a physical body imposes upon him. God, who is all in all, is at once limited and unlimited, finite and infinite, personal as well as impersonal. Encased in relative and perishable bodies and as avatars, God has through them exhibited omnipotent powers. They have done miraculous things which, judged by the unalterable laws of nature, are impossible. Some may doubt whether the miracles did happen at all. They even go to the length of opining that they are sheer concoctions. This view cannot carry much weight with these faithful devotees who, after a sufficient advance on the spiritual path, have experienced the wonders of the inner life. They know that in the realm of the spirit, nothing is impossible. In the light of the writer's unique realizations, he can boldly declare that a person inspired by the Spirit of God can reveal miraculous powers. Apart from the power of performing miracles which avatars possess, they release a world-redeeming spiritual force by which they transform men steeped in ignorance and sin into veritable angels of purity, wisdom, love, and peace. Whoever comes in contact with them, even in thought and meditation, becomes illumined by their light and power. Avatar is God himself in human form. In talking about avatars and God-realized masters, we have a certain assumption, first of all, that God is. God exists and is the omnipotent, omnipresent, omniscient power and intelligence that has created everything that is. And that secondly, that same power is manifested within each and every person. In early Christian church, there were what are called the Gnostics. And the Gnostic, or Gnosis, is wisdom. And it is seen as an inborn light that is within all mankind. Jesus speaks to this on several occasions. John does directly here, that the Word is manifest throughout all creation, its sole creator. and that to all them who believe, that they will become sons of God. A son of God versus a son of man is the difference between that which is born of the body, that which is born of the material senses, and that which is pure in spirit. Now, you can say in one sense that this world is a manifestation of God, which indeed it is. But if you take the light of the sun and you shine it through a prism, and then you watch what it does, it divides that light into many spectrums, and you see dancing upon the walls all the colors of the rainbow, where before it was one pure light. Now you see purples and reds and all manners, yellows and all manners of colors. And it spreads itself all through space in these variety of colors. And so when God creates, in the beginning he is that one pure form of light. And then through the prism of Maya, of that creative ability, comes all the variations of that light. And so we see those variations of light, and they manifest themselves ultimately in this material world as nature, as human beings, as everything that is created are varying levels of vibration of that one same light. And yet we would say that all those varying levels and manifestations of that one light are not identical to the pure light that originally manifested through that prism. It has been changed, it has been altered. And the marvelous thing in this creation is that God gave all the particular parts free will. Some have greater amounts, some have lesser amount. If you go into the mineral kingdom and the vegetable kingdom, very, very little can be done of free will. You are a product of the forces of nature that are acting upon you. But then as you come into the animal realm, there is much that is instinct, but there are also preferences. And the higher you go into the nervous system of various animals, you will find that they have greater and greater degrees of free will. But mankind is a unique creation in this sense. Within the spine and the brain, we have the capacity for self-awareness and for the higher nature of what is called in yoga philosophy, buddhi. Buddhi is the higher intelligence, its ability to think forward in time, to reflect upon yourself, to become philosophical. And that ultimately, when it is illumined by the pure spiritual light within you, it becomes a receptor to the absolute wisdom of God that is available through that higher consciousness. Now, all nature is carrying out a certain mandate from the divine. So it is only man that has the sense of free will to the degree that he has. And so it is only through mankind that we find the aberrations, that we find the real evil, you might say, that can manifest in this world. Animal nature doesn't have such a free range of will as that. Certainly, an animal can become mad, insane, and do great destruction. It can get unusual tastes for itself, so that a carnivore, may attack a man where normally it wouldn't do it. Man isn't its natural prey. But perhaps through some aberration, it does. And once it does, then it develops a taste for that, and it'll continue. That happens with the tigers in India occasionally. But mankind has that higher reasoning fully intact, so he is able to make decisions for himself, and therefore, in many ways, the danger is greater. He can bring himself into a greater state of disharmony. But also, he can begin to align himself with the great light that was in. And this gnosis, this wisdom that is inborn, is the really good news of the New Testament. That there is a proclamation that there was an avatar, meaning spirit descending into flesh. And it is a special designation when a pure element, aspect of God, chooses to manifest onto this world to help in its evolutionary course toward the light. That one comes with a special mandate and special powers. It is an absolutely fascinating tale that Jesus, in his former incarnation with John the Baptist, Elisha and Elijah, and that Elisha asked for a double portion of Elijah's spirit. That's an interesting thing, isn't it? And so Elisha said, yes, you may have it if you see me ascending into the kingdom of heaven. So that was his great guru that was giving him a double portion of his spirit, and it had a special purpose because he was to come back as the incarnation of Jesus, as a pure manifestation and embodiment of divinity with tremendous power, in order to help to change the course of this world. We know that this world goes through times of darkness and into the light, and then from the light back into the darkness. This cycle repeats itself many, many times over tens of thousands of years. Divinely attuned, Jesus knew that this was a time that the world was going to enter into a very dark age, the Kali Yuga. And so he manifested at that time in order to give the teachings that would help mankind through a very painful and difficult period. We went through what historians call the Dark Ages, in that there was very little history that was kept during that time. Nations pretty much dissolved. There was very little rule of law. It was just whoever was the strong man around. And so it came about that the Church of Christ began to grow during that time. Most people could not read, nor could they write. But you could go into a church, and upon the stained glasses, you could see the 14 stations of the cross. You could see the crucified Christ on a wooden cross up at the front of the church or the cathedral. And so there was the story of man. It was an archetypal story. It was a story for all the ages. And no matter what one's literacy or illiteracy was, you could come in and you could get the teachings. It could awaken something deeper inside of you. That is the unique product of a picture, is that you don't need to absolutely understand what that picture is depicting. But it can move you, it can change you. I remember being in the Rijksmuseum in Amsterdam, and there was a Rembrandt picture, and it was a very ordinary kind of scene that was depicted. It was a light coming in through the window, illuminating the interior of a room with a table, with a glass of wine on it, and nothing particular. It was an average scene of the day, of that day. And yet when I saw that picture, it changed me. It moved me, almost as no other picture has. And there is something about it, something about the artist, something about the use of colors and all the rest of it, that gave such a depth of field to this picture that it awakened something deep in me, and I sat there and stared at that picture for several hours. It was a wonderful experience. And I've seen that same picture in picture books, but it hasn't had the same effect as the original did. And so the unlettered peasant could come in, see this depiction of the Christ up there on the cross, and if nothing else, would think, well, that fellow doesn't have it any better than I do. No matter how miserable my life is, that one's worse. And what was it depicting? In the teachings, Jesus said, nothing you can do greater than to give your life for your fellow man's life. And that's what he was doing. He voluntarily went into this experience of the crucifixion in order to demonstrate for all mankind what real service and real love looked like, and that we were all to emulate, to follow him in that life. That no matter how painful or how difficult, no matter that we might be humiliated, no matter that we might be held out as different and persecuted by others, we would have it at least no worse off than Jesus had it. And he didn't go into it just willy-nilly either. We know that from the Garden of Gethsemane, that it was with great anguish that he was looking upon this future that was coming the next day. And he was really distressed in this. He didn't want to do it. He said, "Father, if it be at all possible, let this cup pass from me. Let me not go through these experiences." And yet, at the very end, he surrendered completely. "But if it be thy will be done. Thy will be done." Now, who was he speaking to? He called him Abba. He called him Father. And we know from his teachings that it is the Heavenly Father. It is that one who resided deep within him and yet was beyond him as an individual. It was that omnipresent force. And he would say that of myself I am nothing. It is my Father who doeth the works. And at the very same time, he proclaimed himself as the carpenter of this universe. And you say, well, how can he have it both ways? And yet both are true. Because there is two perspectives to speak from. There's the human and the divine. That Jesus was born as a human. He came into a human incarnation. He had a human body. He had a human family. But he is also an avatar. He was a divine incarnation. And so he was this divinity manifest in flesh. That is an avatar. Krishna was also an avatar. Buddha was an avatar. Rama was an avatar. But it doesn't mean that they just skipped through life and that everything went along swimmingly. They had hardships. They had difficulties. They were helping to set the world right. They were here to bring new light to the old scriptures, and they were here to destroy evil. And they had these magnificent lives that are regarded down through the ages as divine and supremely powerful. And so we are all the beneficiary of these avatars. We are also the beneficiaries of great spiritual masters. As Papa said here, it's not a matter of quality, the difference between a spiritual master and an avatar. It is rather one of quantity, of the width and breadth of the influence of that one. Now, Jesus didn't have a big influence in the beginning. There's just a handful of disciples that he brought into Jerusalem with him, although many were proclaiming lots of adulation. They were very thrilled. They were laying down the palm branches. They were singing chants. It was a wonderful festive time. But isn't it the nature of the world that when the world is with you, things seem to be great? But when things turn against you, suddenly you're standing alone. Where are the crowds? Where are all the people who are cheering for you? Suddenly they're all gone. And so this is the way that it was with Jesus. And even his close disciples ran away in fear. Nobody stood with him. And so then he was left alone. And he had to go through all of this because he was demonstrating for all of us what is required in order to attain the sonship of God. Now, sonship is not, being a son, is not a man or a woman. It is an impersonal term in that sense, but it's all people who would strive to realize the divine kingdom of heaven within themselves. Because that's where Jesus said that it is. The kingdom of heaven is within you. He said some will say it is over here. Others will say it is over there. It is coming in the future. It is coming now. He says they're all wrong. The kingdom of heaven is within you. And it is here and it is now. He said there will be some standing here who shall not die before they see the coming of this kingdom. Now that was 2,000 years ago. And yet, in the way many think about this kingdom coming, they have not seen it. It is because this is an internal experience that comes to us individually. Now, when there are enough people in this world who are having that experience, it will change this world and it will become something new. Right now, being of a religious frame of mind or being focused on God realization, it is not what is foremost for this world. But there will come a day when attaining God realization will be the highest thing in this world, and it will be what the tabloids talk about, it will be what the newspapers talk about, it will be what people everywhere will be focused upon. But that is not today, because we are still coming out of this Kali Yuga. And so this 20th century that we have just come through has been the birth of the Dwapara Yuga, the new electrical age. But like all birth, it's been a difficult one. It's had its traumas. It's had its difficulties. And it is as if all the darkness of the Kali Yuga rose up in the 20th century. And in sometimes in unlikely places, you know, for Nazi Germany to evolve. Before that time, Germany had the best universities. It had some of the freest thinkers living there. And yet, out of that country came this great evil that came up to try to shake the world's foundations. And so there were several avatars that were born in that century. Some of them are well known and some of them are not. In order to stay the tide of this darkness. Now, when Mother was born into this world, she came in a most ordinary kind of way. She was only one of seven children to survive childbirth from her mother. And she came into this world and she was very poor and had a very difficult life. And yet, when she met her master, she recognized that this was the cloth out of which she wished to fashion her own soul. It was the quality that she wanted for herself. And she dedicated herself, heart, mind, and soul, to that realization. And on her way up, thinking of herself simply as an ordinary person, she was told by several saints in India that she herself was a divine incarnation. And she was shocked. She couldn't believe it. She couldn't accept it. And yet, Swami Ramdas indicated it. Master himself indicated it. Other saints in India also indicated this. And she couldn't accept it about herself because she knew herself as a human being. She knew what she had been through. She knew her weaknesses. She knew the ways that she had fallen short. And there are two ways that avatars can manifest into this world. In the first way, in Krishna, for instance, you come in, he came in fully realized, fully knowledgeable of himself as an incarnation of God. When an incarnation comes in, such as Mother, she comes in with the notion that she is just merely a human being, no idea about her divine origins. And this is so that she can relate to every individual who has come into this world in ignorance. And it's a stiff reminder of how difficult it is to gain this realization when you're coming from a place of separation and ignorance. And so Mother's life has been carved out for the ages. It really has been. She came to bring about original Christianity. Christianity, it was originally taught by Christ. And it is not with the emphasis on merely being a thing of faith that you are told who Jesus was as an incarnation of God. And then you are told that if you accept that in faith, that that is the end of the story, really. You have to live the best life that you know how after that. But there is really nothing to attain. And Martin Luther started this when he took out the idea of saints. Saints were no longer something special. Everybody in the body of Christ, or everybody who was a member of the church, were saints. Where before, and still in the Catholic Church and in the East, saints is a special designation. A saint is one who has risen up in consciousness, who has begun to realize their oneness with God. And they've really came on fire with it. They really feel it within themselves. And now they're rising up in consciousness, and they feel absolutely consumed by the divine flames that are within them. And this is a special state to attain to. But there are states that go beyond that, because that is saint consciousness. But to become a fully illumined master, you must go beyond that. You must go beyond all name, all form, all separation from God. Saints will have a continued veil between themselves and God. They continue to pray to a God that is separate and distant from them, even though they may be on intimate terms with them, in that they feel God's guidance, they hear His thoughts, they see Him in visions. Nevertheless, there is a sense of separation. To come into cosmic consciousness or universal consciousness means that you finally go over the top, as Mother said. You go through this full mystical crucifixion that Jesus went through. The 3 days of the crucifixion, where you transcend the physical body, the astral body, and the causal or the idea body. And you go completely into spirit. You merge your little self with the universal self. We were singing the song beforehand, "I am the bubble, make me the sea." And it is like that. The bubble is the individuality. It is the ego consciousness within you. And when you are ready, and when you have developed yourself to this degree, you come to that point where the bubble completely dissolves and you merge into the universal sea of consciousness. And that consciousness is God. And the individuality and the universality merge and become as one. Now, God created everything that is. So God manifests again, perhaps once again, the individuality. Mother told the story that Ramakrishna told about a salt doll, a doll made completely out of salt, hard crystallized salt, and that the salt doll had the desire to go out into the sea and to measure the width and the breadth and the depth of the sea. And so as it waded out into the sea, as you can imagine, a salt doll going out into the sea, it dissolves and it merges and it becomes one with the sea. And that is where Ramakrishna leaves the story. That is what God realization becomes. But Mother continued the story and said that the sea fashioned the doll once again on its bosom and delivered it at the shores of the sea, describing her own life, so that that salt doll may go out and tell everyone that God is life and life is God. All of life, every bit of life, everything that from the human standpoint seems like an aberration, seems like darkness, seems like anything but the presence of God. Now you look through new eyes. You have new ears. Jesus was constantly saying, those who have the eyes to see and the ears to hear. Because you begin to see and hear in a new way. Now, as you look out through these two eyes, you see the scintillating spirit, the Son of God, the Christ consciousness that is spread out all through creation. In the Gospel of St. Thomas, that one of those that was lost down through the ages, Jesus said that the kingdom of heaven is spread out all over this earth, but who has the eyes to see it and the ears to hear it? And it is the truth. You literally live in a sea of Ananda. Everybody wants happiness. That's a universality within all mankind. And some people seek darkness in very dark, disturbing kinds of ways. But yet, if you were to analyze it all the way down to its depths, they are looking for happiness. But there is only really one source of lasting happiness, real, lasting, eternal happiness, and that is in spirit. That is in our divine consciousness. Nowhere else. Everything else will fade. Everything else will be lost. Everything of this world will one day turn back to dust, including this body. Everything. So we cannot have lasting happiness based on any kind of material accomplishment or any state that this body gets to. That can only come from that which is eternal. And that which is eternal is spirit and is of God. And when you know God and when you experience God, you lose your fear of death. You lose your fear of pain. You lose your fear of anything other than perhaps the separation from God, and even that ultimately gets consumed in spirit. Because you realize there is nothing but God, and there never has been. All of these stories that we tell ourselves, all of these adventures that we have entered in, are just simply states of mind that are all contained within the Spirit of God. Now, this may sound fanciful to some, an illusion. And isn't it interesting how the ego takes the truth and says that is an illusion, and takes illusion and says that is the truth. But this is the way that it is. And when we are ready to awaken to this great truth, then God takes us by the hand. He sends us someone to tell us the truth and teaches us the means for attaining that truth. And then it is up to each and every one of us individually to decide to take that truth and the methods to discover that truth and to employ them to their fullest benefit. When Papa was initiated into Ram Nam, he was told to repeat it always, constantly. And he took this to heart. He started repeating it all through the day and all through the night. His daughter, who was a little girl at the time, later on, told the touching story that as a little girl, she used to sit at the doorway where her father was chanting Ram Nam through the night, and she would fall asleep with her hand on the door, listening to her father chanting Ram Nam. She felt so attached to him, and he felt great attachment to her. But something great was stirring in him, and he felt with everything inside of him that he had to follow this path the whole way, and even if that took him away from his daughter, from his wife, from his old life. And Jesus says a very interesting thing. He says, some come to think that I have brought peace. I have not brought peace. I have brought a sword. And I will divide a husband from wife and mother from daughter and son from mother and so on. And what does this mean? It means that when you put God first, that relationships come second. And that if that relationship is interfering with you going the whole way to realization, then you must cast it into the sea of God. Mother did this when she went to Anandashram, and she was very attached to her three children who are now having their own children, so she is also having grandchildren. And she is attached to her husband, and so she, within herself, she put those relationships into the sea of God. She gave them all to God. She released them, any sense of attachment to them. And she went through these tremendous, powerful experiences. And when she came out of it, she found that she had even greater love for her children, for her husband. And so she went to Papa because she thought perhaps that she had done something wrong. And she said, Papa, and she told him about her experience of loving her children and her husband even more. And Papa, in his beautiful wisdom, said, "Can you see?" He asked, "Can you see God in them?" And Mother said, "Well, of course I can." And he said, "Then love God." We're so afraid that going to God will take away our cherished little things that we hold as our little happinesses. And we all have them in the corners of our mind, somewhere back there. We can give up some things, but some other things, oh, I don't know about. Because we don't think it'll make us happy. We've underestimated God. We've underestimated bliss. We've underestimated that God wants what is best for us, highest for us, most beautiful for us. And that our letting go of anything will be amply rewarded by the things that come to us. Now, this doesn't always compensate in the moment. So there's this feeling of letting go. There's this feeling of loss. And yet we find if we will do this, and if we will surrender everything, that God will make it right. He will give us unlimited happiness, joy, bliss, not because of what we have, not even because of the people that we have in our life, but because you have it innately within you. You have the divine consciousness as a seed, as a spark. It is there as real as it was in Jesus, or in Mother, or in Papa, or in Master, or any of the great masters. And the fact is that you have come to become a spiritual master and to realize your oneness with God. This is a wonderful thing, is it not? Only a lack of imagination and insight would leave anyone dull after that thought. It is exciting. It is transformational. It is the most powerful thing that we can encounter. And so we need to treat it with that kind of respect, that kind of thoughtfulness, that kind of understanding. And so that we begin to dedicate ourselves heart, mind, and soul. That the avatars that have come to this world have come for a purpose, and that is to inform you, inspire you, and to help uplift you into the same state of consciousness that they themselves enjoy. And all the great spiritual masters are doing the same. Do not make their efforts wasted. Respond. Respond with your heart, your mind, all your strength, and all your soul. And you will grow so much. You will be transformed into a son of God. And you will never, I guarantee it, look back and think, oh, it asked too much. It cost too much. It wasn't worth it. You will never, ever think that way. In the middle, you might, but not in the end. Mother one time described saying, oh my God, what did I get myself into? And sometimes you think that way because it challenges you on every single level of your being. But oh, the possibility, just think of the possibility to live in the consciousness of Jesus, of Krishna, of Buddha, of Master, of Mother, of Papa. What would that be like? And let that inspire you. Chant the name of God always. Love God, serve God. And most of all, strive to become one with Him. Now, if you'll pray with me, O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, I feel the wonder and the beauty of Thy glorious presence in every part of my being. My heart is bursting with my love for Thee. I kneel in adoration at Thy feet. and surrender myself to Thee.
And surrender myself to Thee.
I feel the power of Thy perfection.
I feel the power of Thy perfection.
Surging in every cell of my body. My mind and my intelligence.
My mind and my intelligence.
Are radiant with Thy healing light.
Are radiant with Thy healing light.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss.
Of my communion with Thee.
Of my communion with Thee.
I and my Father are one.
I and my Father are one.
Blessed Spirit, I am He.
Blessed Spirit, I am He.
Out to the light within you.